Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is Eloy Jimenez. I'm going to hit a home run because I'm the beast.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. There he is. He is the next star of Chicago baseball. Let's bring in Phil Rogers, writing for Forbes. He joins us on the St. Charles Chrysler Dodge Jeep and Ram Hotline, home of $7,000 off on Jeeps. Phil, how are you?
Morning, Phil.
Hey, guys. Mully, I'm a little bit down since you've revealed it's not all about Daniel Palka. I thought it was.
What a leap. What a leap of faith.
Change.
Well, but, you know, I did. I thought Eloy was a left fielder. Is he not going to play left field? We started discussing this morning, and I just in my mind had him lined up there. Is that does it matter?
Well, he's jumped around between both outfield corners throughout his minor league career. I think you would prefer him to be in right field. He was playing right field for the world team in the 2016 Futures game when he made that, you know, he hit a home run off the warehouse building down the left field line in San Diego, and he went over the fence in right field to take a ball back. Probably a signature moment as a prospect. He was in right field then, but last year he actually played more left than right. He's had a bunch of injuries.
Right.
I don't know if his arm through these early stages has moved him from right to left. You would prefer him to be in right, I think. You know, usually the lesser outfielder plays left, but your point was right. I mean, he's a guy that his value is going to come from hitting in the middle of the lineup. But I think he's also a solid outfielder. Certainly not a liability, average at worst. And you know, I think you'd prefer him in right.
Phil, only two other times in Major League history have there been a player that has signed a multi-year contract before his first day as a Major Leaguer. Last year, the Phillies gave Scott Kingery a six-year, $24 million deal with options of up to 8 years and $65 million. 2014, the Astros did the same with John Singleton, guaranteeing him $10 million in a five-year deal or $30 million in incentives. What makes this deal with the White Sox and Jimenez different?
Well, just the size of it, I guess, David. You know that, you know, especially the Singleton deal doesn't really compare, and Singleton wound up being a bust. Probably the big league games he got was the result of that contract. Kingery, it's far too early to tell, but his impact early last year wasn't what was expected. But those deals, you know, guys weren't giving up free agent years, you know, and the fact that this is such a long deal, and you know, it's definitely 1 year. I don't think you can argue 2 years, because he wasn't going to be the White Sox weren't going to burn a year of eligibility this year, nor should they, by the way. You know, the talk about roster manipulation, which is sort of off the table now, is really silly, because you're trading a year of 162 games, you're trading it for 30 games. It's stupid. So, you know, teams that do that are only making smart moves. But, you know, now the White Sox don't have to worry about that, because they have him under control for 8 years.
So is he up for the opener? I mean, is it as good as done? Is there still any reason not to? You know, he didn't have a great spring training. I don't think that mattered. I don't know.
I would be a little concerned that he didn't have a good spring training. Mm-hmm. And it's not that he hit 154. It's that he didn't walk. He had 28, I think, plate appearances, no walks, 9 strikeouts. You know, if you struck out at that pace in the big leagues, you're looking at another Yoan Moncada with 200-plus strikeouts. He's not that kind of a hitter. He might get to 100, but he's, you know, he shouldn't get to 140, 150, anything like that. I don't see any reason to have him in Kansas City on next Thursday. I mean, the game is in Kansas City. There will be some White Sox fans there. White Sox fans travel to Kansas City. But that's going to be a Royals thing. I think it's more about a week from then for the home opener and the first homestand of the year. And that what that would do, I mean, I'm interested to hear what the White Sox say about this, because, I mean, they could do it either way. They could just say, we know more about him. We're not going to worry about the spring training. He's ready to go. You know, or they could take a more cautious approach and say, we're going to keep him in Arizona for an extra week. You don't have to assign him to AAA because the Major League schedule has moved forward now. The AAA schedule isn't. So there's the opener in AAA is actually the same day as the White Sox home opener. So you can kind of postpone that decision about sending him to AAA for a week and let him hit in Arizona, stay in Arizona and hit, and you can evaluate how he looks in that stretch of games, and then make the decision more on April 2nd. Probably make the decision on April 2nd. You know, on April 4th, does he go to AAA or does he come to Chicago to play in the White Sox home opener?
Boy, I'm not really letdown, worried about it.
I don't think it'd be a letdown.
Would it be a letdown?
Yeah, if he's home.
It shouldn't be.
Okay.
I like that, Phil, because Major League camp breaks, right?
Five or six games, I think. I wouldn't really consider that a big deal.
I heard Chris Getz on the broadcast, I don't know if it was yesterday or the day before, they were interviewing him, and he was talking about the Major League team leaves, and then all the minor league guys stay in Arizona for like another week, and as you say, then they split them up into their teams, and then after another week, they go off
to
wherever
they go. So he would just stay in Arizona
for another week. And keep hitting, as you say, and then
fair enough.
Yeah, I mean that wouldn't be the end of the world.
Hey, Phil, you know, you look at the White Sox coming to approaching Aloy and dealing with this in the way that they've dealt with it. You know, getting ahead of the game. You look at what they did with Chris Sale, Jose Quintana, Adam Eaton. That contract was what made him tradable, and getting the prospects in return. Tim Anderson. What do the Sox believe that maybe other teams don't, or are we just focused on it because it's in Chicago? But it seems as if Rick Hahn and company, they approach players sooner than other teams do, and they do this more often than other teams do.
Well, they've had more success getting those deals done. I think it's a trend around baseball, you know, and you hear Mookie Betts and the Red Sox. I mean, the Red Sox have tried forever to try to sign Mookie Betts to a long-term deal, but certain guys just aren't going to do it. And you know, I think to some degree it's the level of the guy. I mean, Chris Bryant wasn't going to sign, he wasn't going to give away free agent years early in his career. I think it's smart for both sides when players do it. I mean, players and agents especially will refer to a player's first fortune. And there's always a little bit of second guessing and criticism in the baseball industry from the player side, the union side, the agent side, about guys sacrificing long-term earnings to do these deals. But it certainly sets a player up well. Adam Eaton's a decent example because people don't think much about Adam Eaton anymore. When he signed his contract with the White Sox, it sort of screwed him up. And, you know, I think when Jimenez said that he was, pressing to make the team, these contract talks were also going on all spring training, so he was very distracted. And, you know, now, although he's been identified as the guy really since at least since the Jose Quintana trade when the White Sox got him, I don't know, in the Cubs system, although they knew he was a great player, and he was a favorite of Theo Epstein for his the way he attacked learning the English language, for his overall being who he is, not just his play on the field. The Cubs knew all about him and loved him. But for the White Sox, he's been identified as the guy for a while now. But, you know, this is a lot of buildup and a lot to throw at a 22-year-old guy all at once. And, you know, we've seen these deals aren't necessarily great, or the history of the guys that signed these deals, isn't really great for them to come out and get off like gangbusters. So, you know, I think you got to keep in mind this guy's had a lot going on and is going to have to settle in. He'll be with the with the White Sox very soon, you know, and he'll get a lot of April at-bats with the White Sox. And he's going to get almost a full season, if not a full season, with the White Sox. But I'm more interested to see how he does in the second half than the first half, because I think he's going to have some settling in to do early on. Remember, and it was only one game, but remember Chris Bryant's debut at Wrigley when James Shields came out there and ate his lunch? I think he struck out four times that day, I think. It was, you know, it was the ultimate fall on your face. And this kind of expectation sets up a guy for some of that.
Where does he hit, and what are the expectations? What does he hit? We talked about Chris Bryant. Does he have to kind of equal that, maybe 26 homers for the year? How do we measure his success, Phil, in terms of his future with this season? Does he have to be a rookie of the year? Does he have to be in the conversation? Does he have to hit a certain number, and where do you hit him?
Yeah, the first part of that question, he hits on either side of Jose Abreu, and Jose Abreu should be bear-hugging this guy like nobody's business the first time he's introduced as a starter in the lineup with him, because Abreu's been on an island much of the last few years. I mean, Avisael Garcia as the next best guy hitter on the team, you know, that's a bit of a reach. And Jimenez Abreu and Yonder Alonso will be a middle-of-the-order mix. So I don't know in what order. Maybe you hit him fifth, and you he'll be in somewhere in the middle of that mix, I think, with Abreu and Alonso. You know, if he had crushed it in spring training, you know, you could have hit Abreu third, him fourth, or you could have hit Jimenez third, Abreu fourth. But you know, he's going to be a big help for Abreu, and Abreu is going to be a huge help for him. And you know, I think what he does. I looked at different projection models for him, and, you know, kind of a middle-of-the-pack projection, I think, it was the one that's done by Steamer, and that had him with an 844 OPS, 294 average, huge batting average, 25 homers. You know, one thing that does concern me with him, for a young guy, he's had a history of nagging injury. Mm-hmm. I mean, he headed to spring training after leaving winter ball early. You know, he didn't get called up, so his season ended early last year. He went to the Dominican to play some winter ball, but he strained a quad and left there early. Last year, he wasn't ready for the start of the Triple A season. I think that was might have been a pec issue. I'm not exactly. You know, he's had a run of these injuries that would knock you out for two or three weeks at a time. Never anything too bad, but he's had a hard time staying on the field for a lot. So I think the number of games is worth considering. And this Steamer projection, which was struck me as about right, had 134. So they're factoring in that he's either not going to be there on opening day, you know, and he's going to have get nicked up a little bit here and there. And I think that's probably realistic.
Great stuff, Phil. Thanks a ton. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, guys.
That's Phil Rogers. Great story in Forbes on this.
Okay. Picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.